Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please, enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hey, guys!
Dave.
Hey, guys!
And Tori.
Hey, Internet.
Oh,
that's not what you say.
I usually say, hello, Internet, but true. You guys were being cute, so I was trying to be cute and failing.
I hope everyone at home can hear how hard my eyes are rolling right now. Anyway, we start every week with good thing, so that we can start things off in a positive manner, and so that Mike doesn't hate you all. So, Craig, what's your good thing?
That is definitely a good thing. You not hating us.
Alright, my turn.
So, well,
No.
Hold up. Listen. A lot has happened. It's been a while since I've been here, so, of course, I've been busy playing games and watching movies and stuff, but the one I want to talk about this week, I think, I'm going to go with it. I recently rewatched it, and I'm like, man, it's a really good movie. And that's the first Kingsman. It is really good.
Oh, I love those movies.
Now, I haven't seen the second, so let's, I'm not, I don't want to talk about that yet, because it's on the, our Plex. We're going to watch it. We own it. Just haven't gotten to it, because I'm waiting for my wife so we can watch it together. But I did rewatch Kingsman. I'm like, man, they did a really good job with the movie. Like, there's all these, like, neat little references to older movies. Like, it has a bit of Men in Black in it. I think it has a Ghostbuster reference at one point. I'm like, there's all these little things that I didn't realize the first few times I watched it, and I just noticed again. But anyway, a lot of good touches. Really good movie. A lot of fun. It's a little gory, but you can just sort of, like, ignore it. Ignore the gore.
But it's, like, comically gory.
Right, yes, exactly.
I loved Samuel L. Jackson in it.
So I highly recommend, if people have not seen it, I recommend that movie to, like, everyone.
I really, really enjoyed it also, and I also haven't seen the second one, and I saw that it was on your Plex, and I'm planning on watching it eventually.
Okay, nice.
Mike's good thing is Craig's Plex server.
Man, it ought to be. I've already got something, but yeah, I'll just mark that down for next week. So, Dave, what's your good thing this week?
My good thing is a pair of video game music composers, primarily active in the NES era, two Japanese people named Masatomo Miyamoto and Takeshi Santo, often abbreviated as Miyomo Shant in credits, and their works include The Guardian Legend, and I believe also Godzilla Monster of Monsters on NES. Those are both really good soundtracks. It's like some of the absolute best top tier music you're going to hear on the NES console from these guys. I think they're two guys. I don't know.
Can you post some links in our Good Thing channel so that I have a chance to listen to it later and try to figure out what on earth you're talking about?
I'm talking about Miyomo Shant, dude. All right. I will.
Appreciate it. So I think I'm next, and my good thing this week is Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. This is the sixth generation of Pokemon games. This specifically is a remake of the third generation games Ruby and Sapphire, and they are my absolute hands-down favorite Pokemon games, and I have been playing since Gen 1. They're so freaking good.
So your favorite gen was 3, or this remake is your favorite?
Mechanically, Gen 6, I think, was top tier. But, like, the plot of the Gen 3 games of Ruby and Sapphire were, to me, the best so far.
Okay.
If you played any Pokemon games, you may remember that the first two generations, there wasn't much plot. You fought Team Rocket, and they were basically just generic gangsters. Like, there wasn't really a whole lot going on there. There weren't stakes. all you really wanted to do was become the Pokemon champion and catch them all. So, like, not a whole lot going on there. But, I mean, they were still amazing games. Generation 3 is the first that really introduced, like, a plot with stakes. I don't want to go into spoilers in case someone decides from this to, like, go out and search out a Gen 3 game and play it. But it had stakes that mattered, which, like, that carried through to, like, the rest of the games from that point forward. Yeah. But
that sounds pretty good.
And then the actual, like, game mechanics of Gen 6 were just the best. The only thing I feel like Gen 7, which is Sun and Moon, did better than Gen 6 is separating the, like, the movement moves, like Surf and Fly and all of that.
That's right, yeah.
Separating those from being in-battle moves to being just things you can do.
Like the HMs, basically.
Yeah.
So, Fly was so good. Surf was really good. Fly was really good.
Well, yeah, but that was the problem is you Flash had to, like... Well, too. Do you still have to carry them around, or is it as long as you have that Pokemon in your in one of the boxes? Wasn't there a change like that?
In Sun and Moon, you just got a device that...
Strength was terrible, though.
That let you, like, call in a guest Pokemon to Surf around on. It was a Lapras, right. I think. But in, like, before that, these were HMs, which you would teach your Pokemon these moves, and then they just have them forever. Literally forever, because it was extremely difficult to remove those moves from your Pokemon once they had learned them. So you had to be very careful about that and not just overload your party with trash moves like Cut.
Yeah, I think that was just lazy programming to keep you from soft locking. I think a better option, even would have worked in Gen 1, is you actually have to use the HM item to remove it. So that way you would still have the option to, you know, Surf if you stupidly take it off when you're standing on an island.
I remember having like a trash Pokemon that I didn't really use, and just he would hold my HM.
Kingler.
That's a really common technique.
Cut and Surf.
The biggest problem with it, to my mind, is that it made the water starters way too valuable. Just sort of across the board, you know you are eventually going to have Surf, and probably Waterfall or Dive, depending on what game you're in. And these are really, really good moves that someone in your party is going to have, so why not have them on somebody that's going to be there anyway? Because they're really good moves. There's no reason not to use them. But yeah, anyway. That's where I'm at. Pokemon Alpha Sapphire, Omega Ruby. I'm specifically playing the Alpha Sapphire version. Like, I have my 3DS sitting on the arm of my chair right next to me right now, waiting for the podcast to end so I can go back to playing it. Tori, you're up.
My good thing is Good Omens, both the book and the show.
Oh, so you've seen the show?
Well, at the time of recording, it came out 2 days ago, and I'm limiting myself to one a day because I waited so long for it. I'm going to make it last at least a week.
You're already recommending it.
I'm already recommending it. Well, because I love the book. I've read the book like a dozen times over the years, and so far the show is a lovely adaptation of the book. I'm really enjoying it. I'm going to watch my next episode as soon as we're done recording here.
Like, I feel like we talked about it before, but I tried reading it the first time, and I didn't really get into it. It was, like, right after I read some Douglas Adams, and people are like, yeah, it sort of has that similar sense of humor. I'm like, really? And then I just couldn't get into it. But then I went back a few years later. I'm like, let me try this again. Give it a try. And I'm like, okay, this isn't bad. So, definitely, it took me two reads to finally, like, get through it and be like, all right.
I loved the book from moment one. I reread it about once a year or so, not like on a schedule or anything, just that's usually about how often I feel like rereading it. And I have been looking forward to the show for a really freaking long time because I follow Neil Gaiman on Twitter and he's been talking about it for a really freaking long time. But I don't have Amazon Prime, so I can't watch it right now.
Oh, sad for you. No, it's really good. I really enjoy it. I feel like it It's very well done. And I, as has been said, I am the biggest Pratchett fangirl ever. And I feel like there's a lot of respectful nods to his memory in there.
So, Dave.
Yeah.
You read some chapters this week, right?
I believe so. I believe I read chapters 19 through 25 of The Hero of Ages by Brandon Sanderson, number one New York Times bestselling author, a Mistborn novel.
The right book.
Killing the tyrant Lord Ruler was the right thing to do, wasn't it? What does it mean to be the Hero of Ages? Part 3, The Book, by Brandon Sanderson.
You sound like a kid doing a book report who didn't read the book and you're padding for time.
Hey man, I'm up to like 60 words already.
Nice. Only needed 250.
All right, tell us about those chapters.
Okay. Chapter 19. Spook. It says Sook. There's no P. Sook is out of tin. Spook went from burning tin to burning building. Who is that voice? Count the skulls. Spook burns pewter. Elsier? And there you go. So, Sook, who is apparently not dead, wakes up to find himself. There might That's be a typo name. In my notes. Apparently he said three names. Which, comes up later. But anyway, Spook, apparently not dead, wakes up in a burning building, and apparently Kelsier directs him through the house and has him consume some pewter so that he can burn the pewter and give himself the strength to escape. Kind of weird. And that's it. That's
kinda
what happens in chapter 19. Kind of weird. Thought he was dead.
And even, this is why we're doing even more chapters.
Dead. Yeah, because that's this. Each of these chapters is about 3 or 4 pages, except the last one I think was 8 pages. Okay. Any questions about chapter 19?
What's up with Spook seeing Kelsier?
I don't know. I have a feeling that it has something to do with the citizen and trying to influence Spook into seeing the citizen's version of Kelsier. Because this Kelsier, or it could just be straight up ruin, being ruinful. Because this version of Kelsier says, I'm giving you the gift of pewter so that you can go and take your revenge. But now I guess he's taking his revenge on the citizen. So maybe, but still, I don't know. It could be pretty tricky. It could be either. I'll say it's either the citizen or ruin is behind this. But actually, I don't know, because the citizen wouldn't be able to give Spook the ability to burn pewter. It's also really weird because Spook has already snapped in his childhood. So why is he able to snap more? Does he get snapper?
Snappier.
Did he discover the legendary Slim Jim?
Maybe there is also some titanium. The yep, stuff the stuff that gives you the allomantic ability, the stuff that turns into a Mistborn, maybe that was also in the vial somehow.
Is that the alloy of titanium?
Yeah. Although I think it's just titanium, I surmised, that gives you the ability to become a Mistborn. Not titanium automaton. So yeah, I guess Ruin is like up to no good. He's free, he can do what he wants.
Why would you assume that a guy named Ruin is up to no good? That's just... that's typecasting, and I won't stand for it.
Well, I cast Ham Diesel as Ham the Rock Johnson. I mean...
is that his
Dwayne Johnson. Dwayne Johnson gets typecast as silly tough guys all the time. And, you know, I typecast him. This is a silly tough guy in this movie.
So, short tangent that I didn't want to get on, but Dave kept going on about Dwayne the Rock Johnson. Speaking of Craig's Plex server, I watched about the first 2/3 of Jumanji 2 last night, and it was really fun.
Jumanji 2, the Jumanji.
Is Dwayne Johnson in that?
Not yet either.
He is, and he's great.
What's Jumanji 2?
Well, it's.
Is it follow the characters from the Robin Williams?
Like, it does not. It's Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah.
Jungle to Jumanji?
So instead of falling into, from what I know, instead of going into a board game, they go into a video game.
So it's Sword Art Online, Jumanji version.
The board game transforms itself into a video game, and they start playing it, and they get sucked in, and blah, 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 blah. Let's get back to the chapters. Chapter 20.
Tensoon's humiliation. Did Tensoon raise me, Lan? Blessing of awareness. Gorsor had blessing of potency. Does Tensoon want the doggo bones? All right, so here we have a scene of Tensoon in prison, and this girl, Chandra Milan, comes up, and at one point it says, it's on page 195 in my copy, a Chandra of the fourth or fifth generation, no, they should never have given children of a new generation to be raised by a third.
Yeah.
So Milan's saying that to Tensoon, so I guess... I'm guessing that Tensoon was kind of like their their lunch lady or something.
I think it's more of a mentor type thing.
Yeah. Like some kind of some kind of relationship where he helped teach the fifth generation Milan is, I think. But anyway, so that's new information about, you know, how Tensoon and Milan know each other. And Tensoon also mentions a blessing of awareness. He's actually counting on other Chandra nearby to overhear this conversation. And blessing of awareness just seems like the Chandra version of Tin, whether it be some form of allomancy or some form of ferrucamy or some form of tertiarymancy seems to relate to Tin. And also Orsor had blessing of potency, which seems to relate to pewter somehow, I would guess. So Tensoon very loudly talks to Milan about, oh, it was so horrible wearing those dog bones. I hope I never have to wear those dog bones again. If anybody makes me wear those dog bones, I'm going to be so embarrassed. So I wonder what's going to happen.
That's word for word exactly what he said.
And please don't throw me in the briar patch.
I sure hope nobody sets me free. That would be really humiliating. All right. That's chapter 20. Bueller?
Well, okay, any questions?
Sure. About chapter 20? Nah, I'm good.
Alright.
Wait, no. Is this the first time you've... Never mind. I'm not gonna ask anything. Just move on.
Interesting. Craig almost spoiled something.
No, I didn't
spoil anything. I have to overanalyze what he was saying.
Okay. I was trying to figure out if Milan appeared earlier, and she has not.
She appears earlier, but I don't think that they had talked yet.
Yeah, they don't interact. He, like, notices
her. She was in the audience of the court during his trial or something like that.
So how could...
He points her out.
Never mind.
All right. Chapter 21. Demo survived. Yay! Ruin cannot know Vin's thoughts. Vin studies Alendi's logbook. It's like Kelsier always said, everybody, you just
gotta find secret stuff sometimes.
Sometimes. Elend likes the logic of allomancy. Elend regrets not beating children. Norden. Bull honky. Sweet 16%. Alright, so here we have Demo recovering from his mist sickness. And Vin is contemplating and thinking to herself that Ruin can't read her mind, and thus she doesn't want to talk openly about everything that she's thinking. And Vin is studying Elendi's logbook, fully acknowledging the fact that it may have been altered by Ruin. So don't really get the point. But she's looking for that extra secret that Kelsier is always talking about. You know, there's always another secret, says Kelsier. Said him all the time. And Elend likes the logic of allomancy. There seems to be some kind of order to it, which he likes, which is seems so non-Ruin. Maybe Ruin is more methodical than we give him credit for. And what's this on page 205? I really should have put bookmarks in for recording. There has to be a balance, Vin. Somehow we'll find it. The balance between who we wish to be and who we need to be. But for now, we simply have to be satisfied with who we are. I just thought that was a really good quote. There has to be some balance between who we wish to be and who we need to be. Truer words were never spoken by Elend.
We know he doesn't talk very much.
All right, so Norden comes in. We'll remember Norden as the obligator who wears the big old glasses to try to hide his tattoos. And he's too cheerful to be a priest, as Vin had once pointed out. And Norden's got some scholars running the numbers and trying to figure out the ratios of who's falling to mist, not who's falling to mist sickness, but who is contracting mist sickness by staying out in the mist. And it seems to be less than normal. And I completely reject what's happening in this chapter. So Norden has, we have X people and Y of them fell to the mist. And they're like, oh, that's less than normal. And then of all people, Vin comes up and she says, well, is X the total number of soldiers we have? Or is X the non-inoculated soldiers that we have? So we're like, oh, yeah, you're right. We should use numbers like we know how to do math. Thanks, Vin. The absolute smartest book smart person in our group. Like, no, I don't buy it. It's ridiculous.
Well, hold on.
Elend, Norden, and the scholars that Norden has working on these numbers.
In their defense, sometimes you're working on a problem and you're just so caught up in like the research that you're doing, what you're looking at, and sometimes you just sort of lose sight. Like, what numbers am I actually attaching, or what numbers am I actually looking at? So they, you know, got into the idea like this is the numbers we're looking at. And
when they get the anomalous result, they should be looking into that, not settling for the strange answer. And then
Vin just comes out. I'm like, wait, are you sure you actually looked at the right thing? And they're like, hold up, no, we're not. Like, sometimes you just need a fresh look. Like, that's it, and that's all Vin is providing. And this is not the first time she has these random insights to just say that. Like, it's just the way Vin works.
What else? What's another example?
Didn't she do? She did that. I don't know.
Well, she's good at intuiting things, you know, more abstract things like this is how allomancy works, or this is what this might symbolize, or this is, you know, this is what this metal might turn out to be. But I mean, as far as a pure mathematical mistake from somebody, I don't see Vin as being the one to correct this.
I feel like it shouldn't be looking at it as just math.
It is just math.
There was an event that happened, and Vin is like, are you looking at the right thing?
I'm kind of with Dave on this.
Because she's reacting to the statement that this was less than usual. And then, you know, Vin logic is like, well, why would this be?
I will give credit to the point that Vin has, in this scene, been contemplating how consistent the rules of allomancy and other things in the world are. So I could see her.
Something inconsistent popped up that was weird to her because of what she was thinking.
Yeah, I can see Vin being in this scene in a state of mind to be like, that's not how it's supposed to work. Well, hang on, double check. I'll give that. But the fact that Elend and Norden don't see a strange result and don't immediately go back and double check the numbers, that's, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I understand that, and I see what you're saying. I don't remember it really bothering me when I first read it, but I definitely see what you're saying. The scholars should have picked up on it, but someone's got to defend.
See, I feel
Wesley
like
Crusher. She's Wesley Crusher in this scene.
Ellen should have been the one to spot the discrepancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Norden should have brought this from the obligators, and Elend should have been the one who picked out, oh, this is the thing that you're not noticing, because it is a scholarly thing, and that's up Ellen's alley. Vin should not have been the one to point it out.
Yeah, maybe, but this is what we got.
But Vin can beat Data at 3D chess.
Yeah, okay, look, that whole episode bugged the heck out of me. Data shouldn't have failed in the first place, like, what is up with, just so they can get the story? I mean, it was sort of neat that it's like, in order to, you know, not win, because he doesn't win. It's like, in order to play the game better, you have to just not lose. And it's like, I don't know, whatever. He shouldn't have lost in the first place.
Are we talking about the Corbomite maneuver?
No, we're talking about that weird chess type game that
I don't remember.
Plays against the guy who
Will Riker? Doesn't Riker beat Data in chess?
Okay, no, we're talking about something else. I'll memory off it, and I'll
let you know. Okay, we'll check that out later. Okay, so the result of all these calculations is that on paper, it looks like every time the mist strike, 16% of people get sick. 16% of the people in the mist get sick. Exactly 16%. Every single time. On paper. Come on, guys. Anything not written in steel cannot be trusted. You know better. So the numbers are brought out by Norden on, we don't get a description, like a detailed description, but the text calls it a ledger. And I don't think that he has a ledger with metal sheets and a molten steel pen that he's writing in on it. I mean, I think they're writing these numbers on paper. So good job, guys. Haven't learned anything in 5 years.
Well, I thought they also write some things in steel as well.
Oh, you know what? You're right. And
they double.
No. That was the Terrace Men. The Terrace Men have everything else etched out in steel, and they compare their notes with their steel recordings. That's not in this chapter. Maybe they do too, but it would have been worth mentioning. But at any rate, this also is like, I also don't really understand, like, what samples are taken. It's like, is it 16% of any sample? Is it like, or are they going by town? I think they're going by town or region. So it's 16% of the population exactly, as long as it divides evenly in whatever samples they're taking. But I guess it's just, you know, the mists attacked this village or the mists attacked this dominance. And it was 16%. I guess that's fine. All right. That's the end of chapter 21. 16%.
We're 16% of the way through.
Yep. That's 4 out of 25. So maybe something's supposed to happen on April 25th. They don't have April, do they?
No. They only have Ska Murder Day. And it's every day.
They do? Of all the weird traditions for them to keep up from the time of the Lord Ruler. All right. Chapter 22. Original 9 Allomancers. Sazed's tea mug. Terracemen aren't killed by the day mist. Okay, so in the epigraph, we have a mention of the original 9 Allomancers. Whoever those might be, I don't know. They're the antecedents. What's the opposite of descendant? Antecedent? Yes, they're the antecedents. Ancestors. Same thing. They're the ancestors of, you know, all the noblemen, of course. And we get a little bit of detail about how the 9 Allomancers and the noblemen were physically changed by the Lord Ruler, but there were slight differences in fertilization and height and hardiness. The Ska are more hardy and reproduce more easily, whereas the noblemen were taller and could inherit Allomancy. But after 1,000 years of interbreeding, there's virtually no difference between them. So I think I had asked at the end of book one whether, I don't remember, did I ask if the Terracemen were a different breed, or did I ask if the Noble and the Ska were different breeds?
I remember you asking, I think, specifically about the Terracemen.
Okay. But anyway, there is a heretical difference between Noblemen and Ska. So good answer. All right, so Sazed gets up and he drinks his tea, and I put a couple of slogans on Sazed's tea mug. I don't know. I guess Craig checked the Discord and he saw my spook tin coffee mugs. Not a tin coffee mug, but a tin coffee mug. And Sazed has a tea mug, and maybe it may say, put the tea in Terrasmin, or maybe it just says Bronze Mind. Or maybe it says, I don't need any calming tea.
Wasn't there a different term you use for the bronze mind? Like
caffeine mind?
What?
Called it a caffeine mind.
Oh, yeah. That's what it should be, caffeine mind.
Caffeine's not metal.
Yep.
But that's why it's a bronze mind, because you're tapping wakefulness. But we definitely can't merchandise a bronze mind mug. I'm pretty sure we'll get in trouble for that.
I feel like we definitely will get in trouble for that, yes.
Same thing with put the T in Terrasmen.
Depends. If we spell Terrasmen wrong, and, well, never mind. We have a coffee mug in the shop. Go get it. Just kidding.
Actually, we probably will have both a shop and a coffee mug in that shop by the time this airs.
Oh, well, there you go.
I don't have details on that yet because I haven't done it yet, but we probably will.
That's a problem for future us.
There's likely some sort of recording that is playing either at the beginning or the end of the episode that'll let you know about that.
You're giving a lot of end. Work for future Mike.
Well, hang on. If it's at the end, the new readers won't get to hear it. Future
so,
Mike.
So probably at the beginning. I'll probably just have Tori re-record her current intro thing to add in.
Oh, but we won't get the bit scored.
Yeah, that bothers me.
But it's classic Tori. I love it. It wasn't the bloop, it was she lags during the word Discord server or something in that recording, if you've ever noticed. Craig, do you even listen to our show?
I listen.
He doesn't actually listen.
I just talk, I never listen.
I mean,
but no recording would be complete without my connection lagging a little bit.
Also, Craig, you said it, not me.
Okay, I do all the talking and the listening?
So, Dave, there were more chapters, right?
Yeah, we still have three more chapters to go. Chapter 23, Pastaborns, Jidal Margil. Okay, so this is mainly just a couple pages of Spook's backstory, hence Pastaborn, because remember his name was Listaborns, so it's funny. All right, and we learn his parents' names. His father is named Jidal. And his mother's name is Margil.
Jerk 1 and Jerk 2.
Jerk 1 and so, Jerk 2. Basically, Spook... Well,
they called clubs, didn't they? Well,
his mother did. His clubs is his mother's brother. Right. Margil does call for clubs.
So the jerk can be the father.
Yeah. And his mother gave him a look that basically said, this is all I can do for you, is pass you off to Uncle Clubs.
Uncle Grumpy.
So Spook... Spook snaps, and his parents aren't happy about that. They're scared. They think that the Steel Ministry finds Spook, that they will just come and kill everybody that Spook knows.
Those are completely reasonable fears. They are right to have those fears.
Probably, yeah. But Uncle Clubs comes in, and he drops a bag of gold on the table, and he says, let me take the boy off your hands. And so Clubs takes the boy away and he says, what's your name? And the boy says, Listaborns, which apparently was just a name that he gave himself, which was some derivation of street slang that meant I am abandoned. So he actually, I guess, had a name before Listaborns, and we don't get to know what that is, at least not right now. So. Yeah, when Kelsier named him Spook, that was the third name that he had. So yeah, just a little backstory, you know.
So this is one of those rare times in writing where an older man buys a child, and it's actually a good thing.
Oh, like an Annie.
And
Or David Copperfield.
Sans any sort of context, my wife gave me a look at saying that.
Wait. Not David Copperfield, Oliver Twist, I'm sorry. Same. Yeah, I know you hate Dickens anyway.
I really do.
I'm with you, man.
Alright, let's keep going.
Chapter 24. To escape, or not to escape. Blessing of Presence gives bonus to concentration check. Varsel throws Tensoon a bone. So here we have a scene of Tensoon in prison, and he's contemplating whether the more noble thing would be to escape and see his plan to kind of evolve the Chondra race through, and also get to Vin and alert her as to what's going on. And Milan kind of gave him a talk like, you know, you're going to give this speech and cause all this chaos, and then you're going to duck out into prison for eternity and avoid having to do any of the actual real work. And Tensoon is thinking, you know, it's honorable to be punished, to put up with the consequences of my betrayal, isn't it? Or should I escape? Meanwhile, he mentions that he has the blessing of presence. So I guess different Chondra have this, to have different blessings. And Tensoon had mentioned this blessing of presence before, which I Thawne at the time just referred to sentience that is given to all mistress when they become Khandra, but it seems to be a specific blessing, which might actually be like kind of like bronze. It was hard to really pin it down to an exact metal, but it could be like bronze, because more in the Faruqimi side of bronze, because it gives you mental swiftness and clearness of thought. But basically, it gives Tensun a bonus to concentration check. So Varsel, one of Tensun's prisoners, throws him the doggo skeleton, which, of course, is what Tensun wanted all along. His means to escape, as he calls it. End of chapter 24.
So what do you think? Should he do it?
Heck yeah. Forget Even Vin was, Vin was, gender. Vin misses him too. Vin was like, I sure wish Tensun were around.
She wants her puppy back.
Yeah, human just isn't the conversationalist that Tensun was.
It's true.
It's Hugman.
Hugeman.
Hugman.
Hugman.
I don't think I'd want hugs from human.
What, you want hugs from inhuman?
That might be better.
All right. Chapter 25.
You did it.
Chapter 25. Trees, portentous, informant, have fun. All right, so we have Elend and co. getting ready to begin their siege on Fadrick City. Elend says, it looks different from last time I was here. And Ham says, yeah, they cut the trees down so they could see us coming.
Wait, I have a comment.
Go on.
Fadrick City, name of an F-Zero track, yes or no?
No. Maybe F-Zero X.
Okay.
Fadrick City, I could see that. But they have Mute City.
They do. And that's sort of why it reminds me of it.
And Port Town. And Firefield. And everyone's favorite, Silence.
And the city of Townsville.
And the town of Citiesville. Did it ever bother you that the town of Citiesville was like an actual big metropolis versus the city of Townsville?
No, because everything in that show was brilliant and I loved it.
That was a good episode when they went to the town of Citiesville and they caused all this collateral damage and they got in trouble with the mayor. Okay. So yeah, the trees are gone. And Ham says, everything is portentous. I don't think that we're getting out of here. And we have Set trying to talk Elend into doing all kinds of corrupt emperory things. He says, we have to capture all the surrounding towns. Elend says, no, we're not going to do that. I'm not bowing to your whim just so that you can have your old town back. Okay, well, let's at least go ahead and assassinate the new leader of Fadrick City. And Elend says, no, I'm not going to do anything until we get more information. So he gets a list. Son of a gun. It's on paper, isn't it? He gets a list. Oh, no.
I will have to say, I really appreciate that you finally taken into account the whole anything not written in steel shouldn't be trusted or whatever the actual saying is. Like, I love how you're pointing it out every time they're not writing in steel.
Yeah, Seiza did. So we kind of glanced over it in a different chapter, but we'll come back to Seiza. So we'll finish up chapter 25. Set writes on paper, presumably, a list of names where Vin can bribe some information and get some reconnaissance done in Fadrick City. And Elend says, I can go with you, Vin. And Vin says, you're smelly. I'm better than you. I'm doing this without you. And Elend says, have fun. And that's the end of chapter 25. She literally says, you smell bad. She's like, you smell too bad to be a spy.
Oh.
And Elend's like, you smell bad too. And she says, I know how to cover it up. Sure, whatever.
Does she actually say, I thought he smells too good.
I think she says smelly. I guess I inferred that she meant he smells bad, but maybe she meant he smells good.
No, he has perfumes and stuff because he's all noble.
Oh, maybe that is it. Maybe I misread it.
And I know
I read it an hour ago. Yeah. You read it 5 years ago. So
no, I read it this year. Well, last year actually. But anyway, and she likes, I think, perfume bath, but you know, she knows what she's doing. That's what she said. Yeah.
Okay, I did miss a couple of points in previous chapters that I wanted to go over. One was the terrace men in Predict, no, in Pits of Hathson. Terrace men have taken up residence in Pits of Hathsin, and Sazed, they bring Sazed some reports on paper, some, I forget exactly what they were, but Sazed's like, I thought I told you to write everything in steel. And then the Terrace guy is like, oh, don't worry, we have everything written in steel, and we compare it every week or so, every week, to make sure nothing's changing. Okay, very good. No one else seems to be doing that. Okay. And also, one point that comes up during Spook's backstory is that Scott are afraid to have coins because, for one thing, there's the greed among the Scott and people will kill each other for coin. And also this little story of a guy who had coin and tried to spend it, and a nobleman saw that a Scott had coin and he killed him. So I don't really know, like, if that's the case, if that is the status of coinage to the Ska, then why did this big bag of coins convince Spook's father to let him go?
Okay, so about that. I feel like that story comes from our history. Like, not that it really happened, but something similar.
Sure?
I feel like it. Like, hey,
are you sure that it didn't come from the real life Tin Mine snapping and his?
No, I meant about money.
And his smoker is not Tin Mine. I just
keep in mind.
Tin Mine
clubs have a slightly elevated.
I understand that clubs has been working for. Well, at this point, I think he's earned his money by being in the army, and I understand that, and I understand also that he's a merchant. I also understand that he's a thief. So I understand that Clubs has money and he knows how to spend it without getting caught. But Spook's father, I don't, you know, does he really? Basically, he just traded
what
in.
What
we're
saying
one,
is the money could be dangerous for them to have.
Yeah, he traded in one big old thing that could get him in trouble for another big old thing that could get him in trouble.
Yeah, but if he knows, maybe he actually knows how to spend it, or at least pass it around in trade, so that way he can get value out of it. If he can get value out of it, it is more acceptable than Spook.
I also love that there's this little story about how some Ska had found a coin, you know, buried in the grime of the streets, and I'm like, that's some Allomancer's coin.
Yeah.
Alright, I believe I sufficiently covered chapters 19 through 25 of The Hero of Ages, part 2 of The Well of Ascension, part 3 of Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson, number 1 New York Times bestselling author. Any other questions or comments, or anything I missed, or any particular questions you want
to
ask of me?
1,000 word book report.
The Yellow Dart. Dave, The Yellow Dart. Cut out my last name.
No, I don't
think
we're good.
I had any questions.
So let's de-Dave ourselves.
I will bid you all adieu.
Bye-bye, Dave.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
So, who's got spoiler stuff?
So, I wanted to talk about something, because I sort of missed it since it was part of last week's episodes, when Spook is Spike. I have to say, like, when I reread that more recently, I'm like, there's some nice details there about how he's actually Spike, because I believe the sword goes through, you know, the heart of the pewter person that spiked. It actually goes through his heart, and I think it goes into, well, no, it can't go into Spook's heart, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to remove it, but it has to go through the heart of the person that you're taking the power from, and it actually is described as such.
Correct.
And there's just a lot of detail. I'm like, hey, look, there's him getting spiked. That's pretty cool. So I wanted to mention that since I missed it last time.
And then immediately after getting spiked, he wakes up and starts being able to see and hear Kelsier. I wonder if those things are connected.
Dave is, I'm pretty sure he's, like he said, it's probably ruined. I think it's, like, he knows. And the details are definitely there. But he doesn't quite know why it's ruined or what he's up to. So there's still some questionable things happening, because I don't think Dave has the information yet to really infer what's happening.
I like that Dave is calling out every time people are relying on stuff written on paper.
I know!
I just wish that it actually came into play in this book, because it doesn't.
It's funny. I know. Like, last book, that was a big deal, and it's like, they should have paid attention. It's right there in the beginning of the little epigraph thing. And now it's like, nah, it doesn't matter. Ruin doesn't care anymore. Like, he, in his perspective, he basically won. He just, you know, needs to get his body and he's done. So he doesn't need to mess with words or anything like that. It just doesn't matter. He already has, he feels like he has control of Vin. He basically has this Koloss army, even though Vin thinks, Ellen and Vin think they have it. So it's like, you know, he has access to that. He has Vin. Now he has Spook, like he has all these little things happening that the people who are who could potentially look for his body, they're basically doing that. So what he doesn't have to do anything. He's good. And I mean, does play a part, importantly, later on, because Spook will send a message in Steel, and it has to be on Steel, otherwise Ruin could easily read it, which Marsh will read. Which is the information he needs to be able to rip the earring out of Vin's ear at the Crucible time. So that is in Steel, and that is important.
Right, but messages being on paper just don't matter anymore.
They really don't. Like I said, Ruin has other things that he's doing, and he basically feels like he won. So he doesn't really care enough to invest time to mess with words. Like, who cares?
I mean, sure, and I get it, just... seems like a wasted opportunity.
I mean, so Ruin, his purpose is just bring Ruin to everything. He's not vindictive. He's not like, oh, I just want to mess with their head because I can. Like, that's not his MO. Like, he just wants things to be Ruin. And he's achieving that. So he doesn't have to, like, play mental games with people just for the fun of it.
Also, at this point, isn't the bulk of his focus on, like, cranking up the ash mounts? And causing earthquakes.
He's spending most of his energy towards doing that. It's actually a very small fraction.
We haven't checked in with what Kelsier is doing in a while. Any ideas where he's at right about now?
He's probably at the Ire by now. Irie, sorry.
Yeah, I haven't gone back to Secret History in a bit, so I do not remember.
I don't know the exact timing of when he interacts with the Irie. I know it's close to when Preservation actually officially dies, which is seen by Ellen, because I think he appears to Ellen last. So we will see him die, and it's like right around then is when I think Kelsier is like probably watching the Fel Knight mentioned in our spoiler panel that he's probably doing something to Elantrian. So I believe he's at the Irie, and he's at least following them and trying to figure out what's happened. This should be roughly around where that is.
Like, I know we see him later when Vin tries to play tag with the Mist Spirit.
Right.
Because for a minute it's Kelsier, and then it's Ruin, but then, like, from then on it's Ruin.
And that hasn't happened yet. So yeah, I think this is actually the time of the Elantrians. It's gotta be. Because he has to get back by then.
So, alright. We checked in on Kelsier. Anything else? Anyone got anything?
So I wanted to talk about Spook. And I did. And essentially, for those who need a recap, he's been spiked. And that's why he has access to Pewter. He doesn't need to be snapped again. Because that was something Dave was thinking about. It's just, you know, he's already snapped, as Dave pointed out. It's just that when with a hemallergic spike, you're granted access to other power based on what you were spiked with and how. It's just essentially what happens to the Inquisitors. So yeah, he's been spiked. He has Pewter access now, and he is currently an implement of Ruin, though he doesn't know that yet. That's the big deal for these chapters, and of course, Tensoon thinking about escaping. Like, I feel like the focus right now is, at least, this is the end part of what happened to Spook, so things are really going to change for Spook, and we're sort of just, like, marking time with Vin and Ellen and Coke. You know, there's the whole big war thing. They're just reaching it. So we'll we'll see more about that in the coming chapter.
So I don't really have anything else. Tori, what you got anything?
A poor connection that makes it difficult to hear you guys.
That's cool.
Yeah, I know. But no, I don't really have anything to contribute.
Oh, I do. I decided I'm going to start reading Alloy of Law. I started that. And there's a yeoman city. Well, no, not a city, but there's something in the Ellendale Basin that's named after yeoman.
Oh, a very good point that Fel Knight brought up last week is that Wax is not a savant.
Yeah, I think he was originally going to be, and then he's not, or something.
Well, no, he was, and then Brandon changed his mind because it didn't really fit with the whole Cosmere-wide feel of how savantism was supposed to work. So he retconned it that he is no longer a savant, and never was.
Yeah, I think the original argument that he was going to be a savant because he has that bubble. He does the steel bubble.
Yeah, the iron pushing bubble, or the steel bubble. That's what it is.
Really think that's just people have really learned about their abilities, and there's more, especially in like Wax's time. There's a lot more metal just randomly about it, and it matters because of guns and stuff that you sort of develop these skills, and you don't really need to be a savant for it anymore. But I could see how he originally was going to be a savant. It feels like that in the first couple chapters, because they're sort of like, he doesn't know how he learned how to do this, but he just knows, or something like that.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is that until very recently, he officially was a savant. He is no longer via retcon. So was a savant power, and now it is not.
Yeah, things have changed. We got more details.
So that's an important thing for you going into Era 2.
Okay.
And I don't really have anything else. And I had a big meal, and it was delicious, and I'm sleepy.
Okay, I would like to go eat a big meal, so I am also done.
Tori, how's your bad connection feeling?
I heard that something was delicious and something about sleep.
Alright, yeah, that sounds like we're done. So, good night, everybody.
Good night, Internet.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at CosmereCast, or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.